Description.
Description?
Of the alleged perpetrator of the alleged threats.
Tall.
Tall.
Dark.
Dark.
And ugly.
Ugly.
Leave it out, Jones.
There was flowers, some flowers, flowers, carnations, fluffy, fluffy ones, and daisies, Arthur Daly daisies, spiky ones.
Daly, I'm going to lose my rag.
Leave it out, he's just had a jab, isn't he?
Oh, do not lose your rag, Chiz. A man without his rag is not a man, Chiz. Chiz, Chiz, Chiz. Terry, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, yeah.
Oh, just had this fantastic idea.
Yeah, bloody good stuff. We're going to get some out.
Welcome to episode 24 of the Minder podcast in association with Minder.org. I am your host, Paul Stenning. This time we feature an exclusive interview with a very well-known actress, particularly in the 80s, Maureen O'Farrell. It took me a while to track Maureen down, but once I realised she had changed the name to Sarah Farouk Ahmed, it was a little easier. You would not think it was easier to reach an actress who became a belly dancer and moved to Egypt than, say, someone in the UK with agency representation, but it actually was. So a big thank you to Maureen for this exclusive. Maureen appeared in episode 10 of series 4, the wonderful Get Daly. This was a great episode full of fantastic one-liners and a couple of very interesting plots. Maureen was there and she can tell a few tales about the show. There is a lot of inside information on working with Dennis Waterman, with Rula Lenska on set, and spending the day with George Cole and his wife Penny Morrell, not to mention the experiences of being a working class actress. And then there is the fabulous Euston film series Widows. In fact, Maureen is still best remembered today by many as Linda Pirelli. So I couldn't resist asking her about that show too, as there is a lot of crossover, and I figured if you're interested in Maureen, you'll like that show a lot too. The first series of Widows was directed by Minder legend Ian Toynton, so we talk about him a lot. There is also plenty of information on what went on behind the scenes between series 1 and 2 and the change from Ian Toynton to replacement director Paul Annette. Not to mention what happened to Harry Rawlins, that is, Maurice O'Connell. Plus there's the philosophy of Brian Cox and meeting Christopher Ellison in an oyster bar. Not to mention working with the Euston Films crew. And there's also the fact that Maureen could almost have been in EastEnders. And finally, wouldn't you like to know which actors were supremely professional and lovely who Maureen worked with on the set of Minder? You might be surprised. As Maureen reveals, she has not really done any press for several decades, so to get this exclusive and to be able to talk about that era was a real treat, even with her occasionally foul language, which made me smile. I loved listening to her, and I'm sure you will too. Over to Maureen, speaking all the way from a red-hot Cairo.
Okay, there you go.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Paul.
Yes.
I'm okay.
Is it Sarah or Sarah? How do you pronounce it?
Sarah.
Sarah.
But you can call me Maureen if you want. It doesn't matter.
Well, it would have been easier because that's who I thought you were originally, and then I found out that you changed your name.
Well, I mean, I was born Maureen, but my birth name isn't Maureen O'Farrell, and people have called me so many different names over the course of the years that really, seriously, if you called me Christopher, it wouldn't matter.
Yes, you are an enigma, shall we say.
If you like. I am, yeah, okay. not to my friends.
Yeah, but are they, do you have British and Egyptian friends or elsewhere?
Friends from many nations all over the world.
I thought so.
Yeah.
I know, I'm sure we'll get...
you know, close friends, pretty much British and Egyptian, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So have you lived there, is it 25 years or...?
23. I came to live here in 2020. But the first time I visited Egypt was the new year, 81, 82.
Mm. Mm. So actually, right around the time we're going to speak about, just before that, you first visited Egypt.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as I got the contract for the first series of Widows, the first thing I did was book a holiday to Egypt.
Mm, so it was in your psyche really quite early on?
From when I was like 11. Yeah.
So what, you mean you wanted to visit long before you did kind of thing? I wanted to
visit Egypt because for two reasons, and I'll try and keep this short. One, because my father took me to see Lawrence of Arabia. I used to go to the cinema all the time when I was a child with my dad. I mean, I never called him my father. I used to go to the cinema all the time with my dad, and we went to see Lawrence of Arabia, and it wasn't Omar Sharif that did it for me. It was the desert and the camels. I wanted to learn how to ride a camel when I was 11. And then when I went to my school, when I was 11, it was a girls' grammar school, but it was in Bermondsey in London, which is a very working class area. Most of the girls at the school were, their fathers were dockers. Our history teacher, the first history lesson we had was about Mesopotamia and the Fertile Crescent and the beginning of civilization, which kind of opened my eyes to the fact that, you know, civilization hadn't started with Greece and Rome. So I had this kind of fascination with the Arab world, which somehow in my head kind of lodged as Egypt. I don't know why, but since I was 11, I wanted to travel to Egypt, and I didn't have the means to do it until I started earning decent money.
I was obviously younger in the 80s, but I do, from what I can remember and from what, looking back, I can get the impression of, is that you were very distinctive and you were very well known in that kind of, definitely in the early to mid 80s period. It was quite almost like a bankable star. And one reason why you can prove that is that in the Minder episode, you were the third billed actor after Dennis Waters.
Yeah, no, even if you blinked, you didn't see me. Yeah.
Well, you were in it a fair bit. Not as much as I would like for the sake of talking about that particular episode, but I mean, was that, I don't think that was accidental that you were billed there. I think that
it wasn't accidental. And the reason that I did that episode was because, one thing, after I did the first series of Widows, it was like, you know, it was almost like we were untouchable. It was like, oh, if you cast her in that, they're going to think that she's the girl from Widows.
Yeah.
In between the two series of Widows, I had hardly any work. And two, it was directed by Ian Toynton, who was the director of Widows. So yeah. I basically did it because, one, I needed the money, and two, I loved working with Ian. So it was just extraordinary the way that all four of us, actually, one way or another, were sort of casting director's nightmare. I mean, it just was that. I mean, I remember being told, I mean, not that I particularly wanted to do it, but I mean, I remember my agent being told that there wasn't a part that I could play in EastEnders before EastEnders started. And when she contacted the BBC and they was told there's not a part for her in this. And I'm like, and then it started, and then I saw why there wasn't a part for me in it, because what? I was standing behind the bar.
You could have played a part in EastEnders, especially early on.
Well, I mean, you know, Angie, you know, all the black curly hair, the big loopy earrings, So that's it. Once that part had gone, the imagination of directors, the imagination of directors in television isn't as vast as you might think.
What happened, love?
I don't believe it. Apparently he just died. I mean, I know he had a dodgy ticker, but now some bastard slag come round there and I've got to talk to Arthur, Terry. I want to know what happened.
Yeah, but I told you all he saw, Tone. That's a full strength. You two got anywhere you can stay?
Guard your mother's, eh?
But why? What for?
Give yourself a bit of time. The first thing they're going to do is pull him.
But why? He hasn't done anything. He was with me all day.
Oh, they're right, love. You see, Tony's got form.
I don't believe it. They were mates. Yeah,
well, you try telling Chisholm that. It aches my guts.
Do you know what I mean? Like, they don't think, oh, she could have straight hair, or, oh, she, I mean, you know, and we're talking at a time when, you know, we're still talking in a time where women are just seen as whatever it is they are rather than what they could be in a lot of ways. Mm.
Did it, because with it being Ian Toynton for the Minder episode, did you kind of feel safe that you would be viewed the right way as the female part?
Oh, I never felt unsafe. Don't get me wrong. I never felt unsafe. But, I mean, I Ian Toynton was just a very good director, you know. Mm. And somebody that, you know, if he wanted you to do something, he didn't want you to do it for any other reason, then you should do it. So I did it.
See,
and he's good, you know, and I really like him. And also, I wanted to work with George Cole. I mean, who wouldn't, you know?
So how was that? Because a lot of your, certainly on screen, you were with Dennis Waterman more, but did you spend a lot of time with them offset as well?
And well, not that much time. I wasn't there that long, but I did spend time with them. And then through the connection, I just remember that the best thing that happened to me out of that was that there was some, I don't know, Thames Television garden party thing that I went to and just spent the whole afternoon sitting at a table with George Cole and his wife. And I wouldn't have done that if I hadn't done that mindset. And he was just such a wonderful man. I, you know, it was a pleasure and an honour, in fact, to spend an afternoon in his company.
Can you remember what you talked about?
Good God, no. I mean, I most probably wouldn't have remembered after it was over because everything, including the drink, was free.
Good test.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, no, I don't. But, I mean, you know, just passing the time, really.
Mm.
I mean, but neither of us were interested in, you know, what is now strangely called networking. Mm. So we just sat and had a nice afternoon.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned to me you've not seen the episode since it aired, but was that you did watch it once at least, but just when it came out and you've not seen it since?
I most probably watched it when it came out, yeah. I mean, I did watch myself on television, but I never watched myself at any other time. You know what I mean? I didn't watch rushes or anything like that. But if I was in something, I would watch it on television. If that's where it was meant to be, or if I was in a film, I would watch it in the cinema once, you know, and look at it and go, ooh. you could have done this, you could have done that, you could have done this, you could have done that. And so, you know.
Well, what do you make of it now then? Because you've seen it quite a while.
I mean, when did I watch it? I watched it a few days ago. And I was, you know, I mean, apart from the fact that I was like, oh, okay. I mean, obviously, I just thought to myself, oh, you were better looking than you thought you were. That's one thing.
Hmm.
Two, I was quite happy that it was just, although she didn't do that very much, at least she did something. You know, she wasn't just like hanging on the arm of somebody all the time. And, you know, Minder's like Minder, isn't it? I mean, it was a thing. And I, you know, I quite often watched Minder. So I don't know. What did I think of it? I thought it was fine. I mean, it's, you know, it's entertaining. And you know, in a way, I mean, it's still quite fine and entertaining, but it's very refreshing not to see mobile phones and, you know, all of this. It's quite refreshing to see something that's not actually dated in its content, you know, but is of a different era. Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was, you know, I watched it all the way through. I mean, it was, you know, quite happily. Yeah.
Do you remember, did anything prompt you to remember filming certain scenes or general filming?
I tell you what I do remember. I remember, I think, Dennis Waterman and Rula Lenska had only just got together. And I remember him in a funny sort of way. I mean, like, she was there on set. And I remember in a funny sort of way feeling, and this might just be my paranoia, I just remember in a funny kind of way feeling as if what he was trying to do was prove to her that he wasn't interested in other women. So are you getting what I'm saying there?
I think so. I think that it was a case of pick. I mean, because obviously most episodes had...
He was okay, but he wasn't exactly welcoming, I think.
Yeah, so you kind of cold shoulder offset.
Sort of. Mm. Yeah. But then again, he wasn't my main interest either. I mean, George Cole was my Rula Lenska.
Mm-hmm.
Terry. Dear Terry, I am writing this in case something happens to me. You would laugh if you could see me now, but what with Harrison and having this operation, I seem to have gone a bit morbid. This is just to say that you have been like a son to me, even though at times I might have been a bit inconsiderate, but you know what the pressures on the entrepreneur are in this day and age. I hope you have enjoyed our long association as much as I have, despite the vicissitude, ups and downs. Good luck, your pal, Arthur.
You know. And also, I mean, not having him kind of, because there were other stories that I've heard from people involved in episodes where he was perhaps a little bit too attentive. So to not have that is
probably why she's there then.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah.
Kind of around the same time, actually.
Yeah.
So I mean, don't want to. I think he's an incredible actor and generally a very interesting, perhaps misunderstood person. On the other hand, I think it would be fair to say there were some negative aspects that he himself didn't shun from admitting later. So I think it's okay if there's a negative opinion. It's not like a, you know, it's just more authentic, isn't it? It's someone's experience. So if no one's ever come out and said really bad things without saying, please don't tell anyone that, which I haven't. So, but you do get from certain people.
It was a different time, first of all. I mean, it's a very strange thing if you're a performer. I mean, you can't, on the one hand, you can't afford to undervalue yourself. But on the other hand, you always think you're not good enough and you're a fraud. And it's kind of what I call artistic conscience. I mean, the point where you think you've got it, you're great, you know, you've cracked that, is when you should stop. Because you're always learning. All the time, and you could always do something better than the way that you did it. However, at the same time, you can't, it's a difficult balance, you know, you can't undervalue yourself, you know. So it's like I never went into anything sort of starstruck, if you know what I mean. They were people, and they were people that were doing the same job as me. Like I said, with George Cole, I mean, I knew who George Cole was and the body of work that he'd done. And, you know, I had a great deal of admiration for him. But I have a great deal of admiration for some of my friends who are not visible. Do you know what I mean? Who have done other things which are just as admirable.
Mm-hmm.
So my thing at work was I go to work. And if I like this person and we get on and there's chemistry, then great. And if I don't, which, you know, in any work situation, there'll be people that you don't get on with. As long as they do their job and I can do mine, fair enough, you know. So I didn't go into that job thinking, oh, my God, Dennis Waterman. Do you know what I mean? And I actually think that might also have had something to do with his attitude to me. Because I think he liked all that, possibly a little bit too much.
Fair enough.
I don't know. This is all supposition, but I mean, you know, and the other thing about it is that if you are actually working class, which is what I am, that's sort of how you operate, really. You take things at face value, you know. You're not into investment.
You know, he's like that as well, though, or was like that, you know, working class as well. So you think there'd be, perhaps it would be a bit more straightforward from that perspective.
You would, wouldn't you?
Hmm. But you're saying
he was the working class guy, and I was me.
More of a portrayal of a working class person in the end, you mean?
If you like.
Okay.
Or a sort of, you know, I mean, the thing is that, you know, it's one thing that's kind of been something that I've been really pissed off about, you know, for most of my acting career, is that if you're working class, there's, you know, it's like, it's not something visible. It's not like, oh, there are not enough gay people in this, or not enough black people in this, or there are not enough this in this, or there are not enough that in that. It's working class you can't see. But at that point, in that era, and I don't know now, but I'm not sure that it's that different. In that point, in that era, if you were a working class actress, and you went up for work, if you went to meet the director and you were like, oh yeah, I'd love that, yeah, that That's great. I really liked it. Oh, fucking hell, really? You would have got the job. But if you come across as somebody that they weren't expecting, like with half a brain and, you know, whatever, then you didn't. And I wasn't prepared to be professionally working class.
Interesting. And also interesting because you had quite a good rapport on screen with him, or so it seemed. So it's funny how that can just, there's like a transference that's completely separate. Yeah.
It's a job. You do it. You know, I mean, if you, you know, in sort of day-to-day life, sorry, my computer screen keeps going on and off. In day-to-day life, you just know, you know, it's like you have your different, you know, in the past, you had your sort of different telephone voices, you know. Your telephone voice for the bank, your telephone voice for, you know, your kid's teacher, your telephone voice for your friend. You know, you it's a job and you do it, you know. And when people say, oh, there wasn't any chemistry between these people, you're just like, well, they just weren't doing their job.
So, so really it should always come across as it's meant to, regardless of the off.
Doing your job, are you? I mean, if it's in the script, you know, like if the implication in the script or the subtext is that you get on with this person, your job is to get on with that person. That's what you do.
This is a very...
not get on with him. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, sort of super negative, nasty, you know, environment or anything. It was just okay. But yeah, I just had this kind of, there was this sort of underlying thing of, you know, oh, right, okay, I'm stepping back here.
You mentioned Rula Lenska. I was just wondering if you had any, did she actually communicate with you? Because, no.
Hello, goodbye, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, no.
What did you say, sorry?
Just hello, goodbye.
You know. Oh, right.
Hi, I'm Sara. Hi, well, Maureen at that point. Hi, I'm Rula. You know. Nice to see you.
So no kind of, she wasn't above a station either. She was just there.
Just there. She was just there. I mean, the crew are never just there. But I mean, they're there. But no, she was just there. She was an observer.
In terms of directing, did Ian get involved much with that on Minder, or was, what were the differences, say, between Minder and, I know you did one episode versus nine of Widows, but was there a difference in how he directed the Minder episode versus how you'd worked with him before? Did he let people get on with it more in Minder? Because that's kind of, I've heard that the directors weren't, they kind of just let things happen quite a lot.
In Minder? Well, Ian had a very sort of relaxed approach to directing. I was very fortunate that the first big role that I ever had was with him. And I mean, like from the first day, I mean, he was aware of the fact that none of us had done anything like that, because we'd all been chosen because nobody knew who we were. He was kind of nurturing to begin with, you know. I mean, not like, oh well, you know you have to do this and you have to do that, but just kind of giving you enough information so that you felt you could relax, but not direction with your, you know, with your part. Or he unless he had to, he was quite happy for you to give him whatever you had to offer, and if it was, obviously if it was what he wanted, he went with it, you know. He was like that with the crew as well. I mean, he was a very balanced director. You know, he was, he made everybody comfortable on set. And that was very important. And he was quiet and supportive. And sort of that's what you want out of a director, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it wasn't like that he just let us get on with it. It was like he gave us an environment where we could get on with it, you know.
Oh, very chic, Trey, chic.
Come on, put yours away. Shirley, come on. She's been in front of that mirror for hours.
I think I should have worn the other one. Did you book the table?
Did I book the table? Honey, we are taking over the joint. Goldfinger!
And now for our next contestant, Miss Shirley Miller.
Well, I like reading and writing and robbing banks.
Champagne.
Yeah, mind me, Gia.
I'll have another one. I've got the old shop up here.
And we've got another 160,000 each. Oh, I love it. I could eat it.
Look, come on, you lot. Let's get this stuff put away. Dolly!
Gosh, she's been in that bath for how long?
Oh, so very much. The smart case you're putting your sherry.
Oh, I'm getting loaded.
Dolly!
Do you think I ought to tell her about the phone call?
Forget it. She'll hit the roof if she finds out.
Finds out what?
You can't keep your big mouth shut, can you?
What's going on?
Nothing.
Come on, something's going on. What is it?
Go on, big mouth.
I put in a call to London, to Dolly's house. Look, I know I shouldn't, but we were worried.
And?
It was him. Harry answered it. It was Harry.
Nobody's arguing with you.
Go and see what she's doing.
You should have let it go. Everything was... Oh, forget it.
Just thought you ought to know, that's all.
She's in the bathroom.
Before we left, I went to Harry's wardrobe. All his clothes were slashed to pieces.
Well, who did she bury, for God's sake?
Jimmy Nunn, do you remember? She can't have known about it at the beginning, but she found out, somehow she found out.
So Harry's still in London?
Why would she burn the ledgers? I just don't understand why she burned the ledgers.
Do you think the rest of the money's safe?
Just a minute. Let go your panic button for a second, Linda. Let's just think this through. You just said you didn't think Dolly knew Harry was alive. Well, she never let us down, not once. Dolly.
I want to talk to you, Dolly. Is Harry still alive? We tried to contact you in London. Harry answered the phone.
I could wear the blue then.
Why did you burn the ledgers?
Look, one thing at a time.
If he spoke to you, then he must be. Cigarette.
Is Harry still alive?
Yes. What else do you want to know, eh? What else do you want to know?
Is there ever any chance of coming back for another episode?
Me?
For Mind.
No.
Was that because you didn't want to, or it wasn't suggested?
No, it was just a one-off. It was never thought about at all, no.
But would you have done?
Well, yeah, I suppose so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just certain characters and certain actresses, you know, seem like they could have been in it more than they were, and kind of fit the criteria quite well. I think you were one of those, so it's kind of a surprise.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the setup was for the writing of Minder, I'm not sure. I mean, it wasn't like The Bill where, you know, everybody, you know, had 15 shots at being in The Bill, was on three times a week or whatever it was, and they were running out of people. I don't know. I mean, I think it was conceived of, I don't even know if there were ever two episodes that ran into each other. I can't remember that happening.
No.
So I think it was conceived as definite one-offs, you know.
Just that obviously you had some women came back in four or five times, so.
Mm.
And also, and sometimes other actors came in back in as different people as well. There was a bit of that going on, so.
Right.
You could have straightened your hair or something.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know at what point in the run that episode was in terms of, you know, was there another series afterwards or?
Yeah, quite a few.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, if they'd asked me to do one, and you know, I would have done it. I mean, you know, I would have done it because it's not exactly rocket science. Do you know what I mean? It's not hard work. I mean, unless it was, you know, a really serious, you know, script, you know, and, you know, somebody had to die or something, you know, which happened very often in Minder. But, it, you know, it was, no, it was, yeah, of course I would have done it. Yeah. There would have been a lot of things that I would have done if people have asked me to do them, but they didn't.
Just one more thing on that episode was I was just wondering about Peter Alexander, because he was your on-screen boyfriend as Dennis's friend in the episode.
Yeah.
Just wondering what he was like to work with, because, again, he only did one, so.
Yeah, fine. I mean, I can't remember anything about it in that sense, which makes me think he was absolutely fine.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, just a nice guy. Mm.
That's how he came across, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just, you know, as far as I remember, he was a very nice guy. And I had nothing, no problems with him or anything at all.
Mm. Mm. Just going back to Widows, because it was quite a... If you look you up now, it says, you know, best known as Linda Perelli. Do you think that was your kind of most impressive performance? Was it, obviously it is the one you're most associated with, probably because you did so many episodes of it and it was a really well received.
First of all, it was, you know, as they say, groundbreaking.
Mm.
And you know, there, I mean, people were writing PhDs about it and stuff because, I mean, you know, seriously they were, because, you know, there hadn't been a television series that featured four normal women, you know, doing something extraordinary. That had, you know, and the popularity of it took everybody, including Euston Films, completely by surprise. I mean, there were two other productions going at the same time. One was called The National Health, and the other one was some historical thing, which they were pumping all their money into. And Widows was like the sort of side issue. I mean, I think it just took everybody completely by surprise, the popularity of that. And there are other things that I've done, but they've not been as not as exposed as something like that. I mean, it was, you know, prime time in midweek. Other things that I've done that haven't had that kind of exposure. So I understand why people say that that's what I'm most remembered for, even though in the second series I was killed off in the third episode, I think.
Mm-hmm. And also you changed quite a bit by the second series. You were a lot more in the first few episodes you were very sort of humorous and sassy and confident, and then you started to get quite vulnerable and a bit kind of panicky, which I suppose was meant to happen. But did you enjoy changing that, or did you prefer the original start of it? Does it not matter as an actress? Do you just enjoy the process?
The script was okay. look, the first series, I mean, this is a politics thing. The first series of Widows took everybody completely by surprise. And when they sold the series, I mean, they sold it to, I don't know, 30-odd countries or something. I mean, it was unbelievably popular. And then they had a series of countries. I mean, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 countries. I have no idea how many exactly, who wouldn't buy it because the women had got away with it. So the second series was written for a reason. It was the comeuppance series. So from the get-go, the second series was not there for the same reasons. The second series was written so that everybody who bought the first series would buy the second series, and everybody who didn't buy the first series would buy both of them. So you're looking at a different sort of artistic leaning when it comes to reasoning. Linda LaPlante wrote that first script because she wanted to write it. And the second script had to be a certain way. So that's one thing which was different. Second thing that was different is the director and the producer, but mostly the director. And if I tell you that by the end of filming, I mean, I'm a smoker, as you could see. But if I tell you by the end of filming, I was smoking 40 cigarettes a day and taking sleeping pills, that might tell you something about my relationship with the director.
So it was a different, as different on screen as different behind the scenes as it looked on screen, because it did change. It wasn't as good the second series. Now I see why.
No, it wasn't. And when I first met the director, with the producer, because it was like, the new director and the producer. And it was like, let's meet. Okay, where are we going to meet? Let's meet for lunch. Where do you want to meet? Oh, well, the director wants to meet in Joe Allen's. Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Joe Allen's was where you went to celebrity watch in the 80s. And it was like, oh, God, really? Do you know what I mean? That was my first feeling. He left the lunch and I looked at the producer and said, are you sure? And then the last day of filming in Portugal, I was walking with the producer to the car and he went, I know it's a bit late to say this now, but you were right.
Mm.
So, no.
That's a rarity that you get told you were right.
Everybody knew I was right from the beginning. Mm. Everybody, cast and everybody. I mean, like, for example, my flat was in the first series, okay? My flat was in the first series. In the second series, I was supposed to do a scene in my flat again. I'm married to a villain. Everything that I've got is, like, knocked off, but very up to date, blah, 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 whatever. In the second series, they took me to see my flat, which had cracked crockery, filthy marks on the wall where there had been a picture. Dowdy as fuck, right? And the crew looked at me and I looked at them and I went, I'm not filming in this. You've already got my flat on film. It doesn't look like this. And the thing was, this is what this bastard thinks we live like.
Wow.
Yeah. So now, the second series of Widows, for many, 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 many reasons, was very, very different. Mm.
You could do a good few shows just about that, I think, by the sounds of what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was it just by you saying Portugal there, was that...
And I stopped acting after the second series of Widows for a while, by choice.
Right.
And then I found myself in a similar situation in something else that I was doing and just rang my agent and said, I'm out of this. I'm not doing this. And then, of course, you know, everything was sort of, you know, massaged about a bit and it was all okay.
Mm.
Yeah.
Was there... So Brazil was actually Portugal in the programme? Yeah.
Because they speak Portuguese.
Yeah. There were some times where it really looked like it was, and then other times it looked superimposed, so I was never sure.
Oh, well, I mean, sort of interiors, some of the interiors were, you know, just outside London, in hotels outside London, yeah.
Right.
But it was, you know, it was Portugal, yeah.
Well, I should have said it at the beginning, but I have to thank you because just to point out that I tracked you down through a friend of yours, and you then came back to me through your friend passing on the email and then agreed to the interview. So that's quite unorthodox and but very appreciated because, you know, you never know if someone's going to be happy that they've been found or just...
It's not that I don't... it's not that I... You know, I just detest social media. I use it for the work that I do for other people. I don't use it for myself. Emails I'm happy with, but you know, everything else is just toxic. I hate it.
Yeah, agreed. Talking of people who disappear, I don't suppose you did you know much about Maurice O'Connell? I read only fairly recently that he'd actually disappeared. I didn't realize that.
I have no idea what happened to him. And strangely enough, before I was in Widows, I was in a company called Stirabout, which used to perform in prisons. And in order to be in that company, you had to have a security check because you couldn't have been in prison and then go back into prisons to do entertainment and workshops and stuff like that, which is what we did. And he applied for a job with the company. He wasn't passed by security. And then he turned up in Widows. But actually, I didn't have a great deal to do with him. I never shot a scene with him, as far as I remember.
Mm.
I spoke to him on the phone, but it wasn't him. You know, he wasn't there. but I saw him in passing, but that's all I ever had to do. Wasn't he in EastEnders at some point?
I'm not sure. I'd have to check.
I think he was. I think so, but I never watched it. But I have a sneaking feeling that he was.
Yeah, sounds familiar. You can imagine it anyway. You can imagine him in EastEnders. He'd be a good villain. He was a good villain in Widow.
I think he was in EastEnders. I don't know why. It might be like one of these like sort of stupid made up memories, but I kind of think that he was for a while.
There's quite a few people like, I mean, he's a bit, obviously it's been publicised he's actually literally disappeared, so cool. But there are a lot of people who, you know, like yourself, someone could think maybe you disappeared because you're not.
Oh, no, I haven't disappeared. I've moved on.
Yeah, exactly. So it's nice to see.
I have a life, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sure hopefully he's the same. He just doesn't.
One would hope so. I mean, the thing is that, you know, it's like these days, if you're not posting a photograph of your breakfast every day, you've disappeared.
Exactly.
And I'm like, really? Seriously? No.
Yeah. There's something to actually live in your life rather than showing people you live in a life that's preferable.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you want to mention that we've not, that you remember from these classic TV days or anything else that you wanted to, thought I may mention?
I was just glad. I mean, glad that I was of an age in the 80s when, you know, I could take advantage of to whatever degree I was allowed, of, you know, good television. And then when I decided to come here in 2000, I'd actually, apart from, I worked on Arabian Nights with Steve Barron, who's a wonderful director, at the end of the 90s. And when I first came here, I was going to be working with him again on The Thief of Baghdad, but that was all dropped after 9/11. With Hallmark. It was Hallmark who did it. But apart from that, I mean, you know, I was just like looking at what I wanted to do, which is TV drama, had virtually disappeared, you know. And then, you know, because people said to me, oh, well, if you'd stayed, you know, you might have been in Downton Abbey. And I'm like, yeah, but what would I have been in Downton Abbey?
Yeah, but that's, I mean, it's not a bad point, really, is it? Because some of the people in that, they've been on TV for ages and they have kind of reinvented themselves on that.
Yeah. But, I mean, because actually British TV on, you know, drama on TV in the 1990s was appalling, you know. And I mean, I'm not alone in this. I mean, I actually was listening to an interview the other day with Brian Cox, who said, you know, I just decided to go to America and earn more money for being in shit, you know, which is what he said, you know. And, you know, obviously that's come round for him because of Succession and all of that. But I mean, I was just, it was just a bit of a wasteland, you know.
Well, I mean, it's good what he's done. He was actually in an episode of Minder. But, yeah, I get the impression from you that you wouldn't do, maybe, I don't know whether you'd take the payday for something, but you get the impression you'd have to like it. Have to like the script or be invested in it in some way more than just appearing for the sake of appearing and being paid really well. And then you watch it back and you think, no, that's awful. Because, like, even now you're saying with Minder, you watched it again and it was good, which,
yeah, it was fun, you know.
It stands the test of time,
and it was fun to do. I mean, no, I mean, look, my thing about being an actress is you go for an audition, not an audition, you go to meet a director, okay? You go to meet a director and you meet the director, right? And more often than not, if I got offered work, it was by people who wanted to work with me. And it was their job. Do you know what I mean? It's their job to give. And so they wanted to work with me, and so it was good and it worked, you know. But then you would go and meet other directors who kind of wanted you to put on a bit of a sort of display of either, like, you know, that silly East End shit that I just did, you know, which is, you know, the stereotyping, or you know, huge amounts of gratitude for the fact that you were sitting in a chair. I wasn't very good at that. And so I didn't get work with those people. And in a way, I'm kind of glad I didn't, you know. I mean, I remember at one point the casting director from the National Theatre asking to see me, and I went to the National Theatre. And at the time I was living in Kennington. And she was like, so how do you feel about working at the National? And I was like, well, you know, if it's a decent part, I'll feel good about it. But if I'm coming on and going, would you like a cup of tea, sir, and walking off again, I wouldn't. And she said, but it's the National Theatre. And I went, well, the other upside to it is that I could walk to work. That's not what they want to hear. I would love to work for the National Theatre. I would do anything. I would be a spear carrier. I would do this. I would do that. You know, this is, and you're like, no, it goes back to me saying you have to have some kind of idea of who you are, you know, and you know, I, you know, who knows if I'd have done that and if I'd have worked at the National, who knows what would have happened, but I wouldn't be where I am now because somehow my life would have changed. And then you get people sitting opposite you with your CV in front of them saying, tell me about yourself. And you're like, and they're like 25 and they've got a suntan from the roots of their hair to underneath their fingernails. And you're like, well, actually, why don't you tell me about you? Because you've got my CV in front of you and I know nothing about you. Don't get the job. Will you lay on the floor? This is one thing I went up for. We want to know what you look like asleep. And I'm like, well, I look like this. No, we want you to lay on the floor and put your head on that pillow, which was on the floor.
Really?
So we can film you asleep. And I just went, sorry.
That's the lot.
Seems a bleeding sight more than 50 to me.
It's 50, all right. I counted everyone down those warehouse stairs in the dark.
Oh, dear. You have got some bottling to go.
I've got to keep things ticking over while Tony's out of action.
I spent some time in a nick, you know. Could all have been different if I had a little grafter like you on the outside.
Well, it's never too late, Tell.
Dad. Hello? Yep. What? But look, Arthur, calm down, will you? I can't understand a word you're saying, mate. Ah. Yeah, all right. I'll be right over. Arthur's had a little turn. Something went bump in the night.
I was lucky because the people who wanted to work with me worked with me. And I never found myself in a situation where I'd had to pretend to be somewhere at somebody else in order to get a job. So I think that's why it worked, that I didn't play the game. Or whatever that is supposed to mean. I don't know.
Interesting. Can I finish off just mentioning a few people that you work with who were also in Minder, but you work with them in other things?
And just, you can.
If you remember, if you don't, don't worry. People very rarely do. But and we didn't mention before, by the way, you were in a scene or two at least with him in Minder. Glyn Edwards, do you remember? Much of the barman, Dave.
Oh, him. Oh, he was lovely. Absolutely lovely. And the guy who played the ongoing detective.
Yeah, Chisholm. Patrick Malamud.
Yeah. Both of them were absolutely beautiful. Lovely. And very, you know, okay, this is a peach of a job. Do you know what I mean? Because they're in, they're out forever, you know. Both of them very professional, very good at their job, knew exactly what the score was, no airs and graces, nothing. Lovely, lovely people.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you meet in that episode as well? Gordon Kay was in it. He wasn't in any scenes with you, but... there was quite a strange cast on that one. It's quite a combination.
Gordon Kay was who?
Renee. No, hello, hello.
Oh yeah, hello, hello. No, I don't think I ever met him.
Okay.
He was great in Hello, Hello.
Yeah.
And he was quite good in that Minder as well. But I mean, I never met him.
Okay. In Widows, there were Stanley Meadows and David Calder. Obviously, was quite a big part. But I'm not sure how often you probably came across them in scenes. Probably not. But they were in most episodes. So David Calder was the...
Oh, David Calder?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, him. Yeah, no, nice guy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Stanley Meadows, he was... God, I'm going to remember now. He was someone that kept snooping on Dolly's house. I think he was supposed to be related to Harry.
Oh, he was the sort of go-between.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't think I had anything to do with him, actually. No.
He's been around forever. He's been in so many different things.
Yeah. Character. No, I don't think I had any scenes with him. I don't think I even met him.
It's weird that can happen. We didn't really go into him, but...
Well, I never did anything anywhere near Dolly's house.
We did mention him a bit before, but didn't go into... Christopher Ellison, what was he like?
Well, I mean, very nice. We got on very well. You know, hello, Ellington, years down the line.
Yeah.
You know, I actually met him in an oyster bar quite by chance in the City of London one lunchtime. And he said that he was doing this new series. And, you know, it was one of those chance meetings. And I'd actually not been acting for a while at that point. And then they got in touch with me. Yeah.
So have you stayed in touch with anyone since going out of the business? Anyone from that world?
Actors? I'm trying to think. So that, I mean, obviously not really, but I'm still friendly with Steve Barron, the director. I'm still very much not at the moment, but in the past. Maysoon Plattachy, who's now makes documentaries and film. She was the editor, one of the editors on Widows, and I met her on that. And I think she might have been the editor on Minder, I'm not sure.
I was actually going to ask you, because I don't know, I didn't look at the kind of the technical staff, but like with Ian Toynton, you'd worked with him already. Was there a crossover in some of the crew from Widows to Minder? Were there any Euston Films kind of regulars that you would already work with?
I mean, more than likely. More than likely. I mean, I couldn't say specifically. But, I mean, when you work in film or television as a performer, your audience is the crew. And they're wonderful people. I mean, they're all really good at what they do, otherwise they wouldn't be there. Because, you know, nobody can afford to employ somebody who makes mistakes on the crew, and because of the time, you get a real feel of family, because like you say, when you're acting in something, quite often people play quite big roles in the same thing as you. You never see them, you know. You just don't come across them. But the crew are the constant. And they're really important to you. They're the people who make you feel at home, and they're also the people who let you know if you've actually kind of done something worth watching. You know, if some great big burly spark when you come off set goes great, you're like, this guy's seen a lot. He didn't say that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The crews provide your home on a set. I mean, that also includes the director, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, would you all say by the time you've kind of finished the scene and then finished the episode that if everybody's kind of happy with it, you would already know that it was going to be good, because they wouldn't have approved of everything. They already knew it was going to look good when it came to the full episode.
Well, yeah, unless there's a complete disaster in editing. And I mean, I'd never been involved in something that was so important or expensive that you had a whole raft of people going, oh, you know, it's got to be 20 minutes shorter, and you can't have this scene and you can't have that scene. So, I mean, pretty much the director is sort of in charge of how it's going to be. And so if the director is happy with it, usually it's good. but you actually know if you're on the road to disaster, because it's the crew. The crew don't have. There's a kind of energy that emanates out of a film crew. I mean, to be quite honest, I would sweep up on a film set. I love film sets, but there's like this kind of energy, and it's creative energy, and they all know they've got a part to play in it. And if something's going horribly wrong, that energy disappears. It's just a job. Mm. So you do know, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, like I say, I'm not, you know, it's not like I've been in like some kind of like huge movie that everybody thought was great, and then the money people decide that it has to be chipped and chopped and changed, and then it just becomes a disaster. No, I've never been involved in anything at that level. Mm. So, and maybe that's fortunate.
Mm. It is, yeah, because you've had your career stands where it does, and it's only ever been good things.
Pretty much, yeah.
Even if
one of the best things that I ever did was for Yorkshire Television, which was for schools, and it was about the sinking of the HMS Hood. It was called The People's War, and it was absolutely fantastic and a wonderful little story. And I don't think, you know, anybody over the age of 10 has seen it.
Mm.
I don't know how to get hold of it. I have no idea. And I mean, I can't be asked in a lot of ways, but it was a lovely job. Mm.
Mm. They don't do that anymore, do they? As far as I know.
No.
That's a shame.
No, because it was a program which encompassed all kinds of things during the Second World War, like, you know, German Jews being put into camps, even though they were refugees from Germany, you know, and the fact that HMS Hood was basically sacrificed so that people would get behind the war effort again.
Mm-hmm.
No, people don't do things like that anymore.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for all your time, Maureen, Sarah.
Hi.
Really appreciate it. I'll let you know when.
You have to let me know, you know, because I mean, I told a couple of friends that I was doing this afternoon because Friday's the day off, yeah, here. So, right. I mean, they were like, okay, so let's do this. Or I'm like, no, I can't. I've got to do this. So, oh, well, what about, you know, can't you change it? And I'm like, no, it's something to do with what I used to do when I lived in England. And I mean, hardly anybody here knows anything about it. They're like, oh, we have to see it. What is it? So everybody needs to know that I have not disappeared.
Yes.
I'm still on my journey.
But quite happy to act again.
I miss it, yeah. But I mean, I miss it, but, you know, I also miss decent mushrooms because you can't get mushrooms in, you know.
Small things, isn't it, when you're abroad? I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, but and decent stationery shops. They're the two things that I miss. A decent stationery shop, apart from people. you know, she doesn't want to upset anyone. Stationery shops and decent mushrooms. And I missed acting when I was living in England, you know.
Yeah.
Watching Big Brother or not, you know.
All right, thank you. I'll be in touch.
Thank you for your time.
No, thank you.
Okay.
Right. Cheers.
Okay. We'll be in touch.
Yes, I will. Bye bye.
Bye. Take care.
You
bye.
Too. An immense thank you to Maureen O'Farrell for making the time to speak to me and for being very engaging company with great honesty and humour, which I had to say I did expect, and I wasn't left disappointed. I trust you two enjoyed the show.
And just for the record, Maureen's name is actually Sara Farouk Ahmed, but she doesn't mind being called Maureen still. In fact, she said we could call her Christopher if we wish. Many thanks for those who've written in recently with comments on recent episodes. A lot of positive comments on the Diana Malin show, with nothing but love for the character of Debbie, and an acknowledgement for the information I provided in the show. So thanks for that. It is greatly appreciated to hear when it is received in the way I intended. A shout out to a man who wrote to me who has had 108 Ford Capris in his lifetime. I'd be happy with just the one, preferably a Mark II or III. But there is a clue for a possible upcoming show. We have to get to the motors at some point. As those of you who've been listening to the show for more than a few episodes will know, I am not one to advertise. You don't get irritating interruptions for products which do not relate to this show at all. Here is an interruption which I think is well worthwhile. I happened to come across a product which I had to ask about and found something very interesting indeed when it comes to Minder. The man known as Confessions Pete is all over Twitter, and he has produced a couple of great unofficial Minder products. Firstly, there is a Dennis Waterman tribute magazine, 28 pages of glossy text and photographs celebrating Dennis's life and work. This is a very nice memento, and I must say it goes quite well with our tribute episode that we did for Dennis, as it covers a lot of his early work, which tends to be missed by many. My favourite product is the Minder calendar. Now this is a great piece of work, perfect for hanging up anywhere in the house. It's so good, in fact, that I wouldn't want to spoil it by writing on it. But if you want to, or you just want a very handsome reference for dates, this is also very well thought out, as it starts in November this year, so you have a 14-month calendar. As a new friend of the show, Confessions Pete is also offering a discount for Minder Podcast listener. So do check out the products. Any queries, you can find him on Twitter, at ConfessionsPete, or email via Outlook. That is confessions as in of a window cleaner. You can see the products at confessionspete.com. If you click on the link for Dennis stroke Minder combo, there is a deal on both products with free beer mats. And if you add Minder Poddy, that's Minder P-O-D-D-Y, as a voucher code, Pete is offering Minder Podcast fans an additional £5 off. Now that is a bit tasty. Thanks, Pete. And thanks to you for tuning in. We'll be back next time with some more readers' emails and possibly a surprise interview. Cheers.